This podcast is proudly supported by Baseballism, an all baseball related apparel and clothing company for baseball people. Check them out at baseballism.com.
Welcome to the ANA Sports Podcast, Sports Talk, with your hosts, Anthony Cortez and Alex Ashley.
And Kevin!
Oh, yeah, and Kevin Rowe.
Not this week. This episode, we'll talk NBA and some unsportsmanlike activity out there. But before we do so, let's talk about our friends real quick at Baseballism. Baseballism is an all-baseball-related apparel clothing company for baseball people. If you're a baseball fan, you should be wearing Baseballism. It's America's brand, the official off-the-field brand for baseball. Visit them at baseballism.com, and while you're there, use our coupon code AASports. Our initials AASPORTS for a 15. That's 15% discount off your first order. And if you're not ready to order just yet, make sure you go follow them on their socials. They're very active on Instagram and Twitter with new releases pretty much every week, if not every other week. I got an email today about new sunglasses coming out, so I'm very excited about those. Hopefully I can get those soon. They just released like some new like sweatshirts for the fall and winter coming out. So go check them out. There's free shipping on orders of $100 or more. So if you want to go spend a lot with them, it's really easy to do. You get free shipping on your orders. Masks are available in like 7 or 8 different styles now as well as youth masks. The youth masks come in like packs of 3. So go check those out. Field of Dreams collections as well, stay-at-home shirts, Babe Ruth collections, Major League collection as well, shirts and hoodies with built-in masks, sweats, caps, and shorts, accessories, like I said, sunglasses as well. All great, comfortable material and really fast shipping. Even with the pandemic having an effect on shipping these days, Baseballism is still on their game as far as getting their stuff out to you. So keep supporting your local and small businesses out there, whoever they may be. Baseballism is included, and yeah, they support us, so go support them. It's baseballism.com. It's America's brand. Thank you. All right. I am Anthony Cortez, joined alongside my two good friends and co-hosts, Mr. Alex Ashley.
What's up?
And Mr. Kevin Rowe.
Hey.
All right, gentlemen, let's get into some NBA. We're through three games as we're recording this on a Monday night. We're through three games of the NBA Finals. The Lakers have a 2-1 edge on the Heat. Game 4 will be played tomorrow night. This will probably already be out by then. Hopefully it's out by then. Any thoughts and early observations you've seen through three games? Kev?
The Heat are chipping, man.
That they are.
Best way I can describe it. I mean, you're down two of your top three stars in Dragic and Adebayo after the first game, and they came out and Jimmy Butler took over a 40-point triple-double in game 3 and pretty much held the lead the entire game against the mighty Lakers. That star power on the Lakers, though, really helped in the first two games. You got LeBron and AD pretty much combining for, I think, 2/3 of the points that the Lakers scored overall in the first two games, including a triple-double by LeBron in game 1. So, yeah, it's still going to be interesting because if you can get Dragic and Adebayo back in the series – they can make a good series of this, but if those guys stay injured and stay out the next few games, the Lakers are going to put it away because I don't see the Heat being able, or I don't see Jimmy Butler being able to keep that up again moving forward.
Alex?
Yeah, no, I agree. With a lot of the things that Kevin said. So it's interesting when you look at the first two games of the series, it was very much an Anthony Davis and LeBron James show. All the attention was on those two players, you know, but you still have to see that, you know, Caldwell Pope was a huge, huge hit in those couple of games to start. Those clutch 3-point shots that he made consistently kept the Lakers on top. Danny Green and his defense was doing well. Dwight Howard was another guy that needed more recognition than he actually got. Because one of the things that he kind of struggled with is outside of Adebayo, they don't have a whole lot of size, or at least skilled size. They do have Marcus Leonard plays as a center, Andre Iguodala is a great defensive player, but he's not exactly the tallest guy on the court. He's not going to be able to really take on an Anthony Davis or Dwight Howard. But I think, honestly, the thing that was helping the Lakers the most in those first two games was the fact that Miami was missing shots. If you look at their shooting percentage from the first couple of games, Miami had a real low shooting percentage. And what we saw in game three is that even when they didn't have some of their better guys, even when they didn't have Adebayo, they started to heat up from the floor. Jimmy Butler, 40-point triple-double. That's insane. Eric Spoelstra tells him every day, you are the best signing in Miami Heat history. That's kind of a shot at LeBron. You look at Crowder, who had 12 points. You look at Robinson, another 13 points. Hero, 17 points. These guys are shooting, you know, pretty consistently from the three-point spot. Olnick had 17 points. He was 3 of 5 from the three-point. If you ask me, if Miami can sneak one more win, if they can get one more win tomorrow, I think the Lakers are in serious trouble, especially because that's when Adebayo comes back. That's when all these other guys come back. If Tyler Hero and Dennis Robinson can start to – or Duncan Robinson, excuse me – can start to heat up and Jimmy Butler can keep this up, even some of it, even if he scores somewhere in the 25 ballpark, the Heat are a very scary team, and I think the Lakers will struggle. Because, again, it's that game of odds. You look at how many three-point shots are you going to put up versus how many you make, and they're a lot more consistent than the Heat. But they also have the ability to play inside the paint, which is something the Heat don't. So, with that being said, it really, I think the series really kind of comes down to who wins this next game. If you are a Lakers fan, you need to win this next game, or that win percentage for you, that the likelihood to win the championship is dramatically changed. You go up 3-1 on the Heat, there's a pretty good chance you're going to win that series if you're the Lakers. But, like I said, if Miami starts heating up, Miami can shoot their way into a playoff. They can shoot their way off into a playoff win. And so you really, really, if you're LeBron James and company, you really need to win this next game, like badly.
Like badly.
I mean, look at what they did. They came back. They were down games. They swept games. They did what they needed to do. They bounced back well as a team. They play well. They now understand. Eric Spoelstra is a hell of a coach. I think he'll be able to make adjustments to put themselves in a position to win, especially now that he has three games worth of tape on him. I can't remember who said it, but they said the Lakers are in trouble. I think it was Jimmy Butler. He said the Lakers are in trouble.
You also think it goes the distance? I think we all collectively said seven games for our respective picks, but right?
Yes, I think we all did.
It's going to depend. If Adebayo and Dragic can make it back into this series, absolutely it'll go the distance. If not, I can see the Lakers closing out in five or six.
I think the size is a big thing in this series as well. I was talking to Isaiah, and he said that that's my buddy Isaiah. He's a Lakers fan. He just has mixed opinions about LeBron. It's kind of funny, but he just thinks that the Lakers are too big for the Heat, which is a good point. I mean, they're a bigger team than the Heat.
That's what I was saying. Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, got big guys down low.
Yeah, they can play in the paint, and AD can have his way if he wants to. You did bring up a good point though, Alex. The Heat did score, or not? They didn't shoot the ball very well, so that's another big thing. I still think this goes seven though, depending on, like Kev, you said, depending on what happens with some of the Heat's key guys if they're able to come back. But Jimmy Butler probably has to have more. Or at least, you know, Jimmy Butler has to do what he did last night three more times, I think, in order for them to win. And I don't know if I see that happening.
He has to do that if those other two guys don't show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to – if those guys come back, he doesn't need what he did last night, but he does need to have at least consistently double-double 20-point games to win.
But one thing he did last night, and I know we talked about this a little bit before, and I want to kind of bring this up, but what he did last night was play so well that by the time the game was over, the Lakers – were over it. They were over that game. Jimmy Butler.
Before we get into that, I do want to say this about that too. The Heat controlled the boards last night in game three. And when asked about it at the end of the game, Jimmy Butler even said, that's the key. We control the boards tonight. We got to keep them off the boards. Those rebounds are huge. And if we can continue to do that in this series, we're going to win. And I agree with them 100% because it's hard against the Lakers because they are a bigger team than the Heat are. But if they can find a way to control those boards like they did last night, they got a shot. So, but yeah, going back to your point at the end of the game.
No, just Jimmy Butler played that game so well that the Lakers looked like they kind of gave up at the end. They knew that they had been beat and they were tired of that game, it looked like to me. To the point where, and I know you guys saw this, we talked a little bit before, but LeBron James walked off the court while the game was still playing with 10 seconds left on the clock. He left. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. What do y'all think about that?
I didn't watch it live. I
saw it.
Yeah, I didn't watch it live. I changed the channel when I thought the game was decided. And then I saw the highlights on SportsCenter. In fact, I don't think I saw it live. I think I saw highlights on Twitter, and I saw a couple of posts on Twitter, people making a big deal about it.
Did you see it live?
No.
Thank you. I wasn't sure.
I love listening to announcers say it because it wasn't just LeBron. It was a lot of the Lakers team. And what it was at the end of the game was that there was a 0.7 second differential between shot clock and game clock. Well, Miami had the ball. They ran out the 24-second clock, but a lot of the Lakers already walked off, including some of the starters that were on the court at the time. Well, the Lakers have to inbound the ball, but you need five people on the court to do it.
Mm-hmm. Was that the situation?
They just got a couple of the people off the bench finally just like took off their sweats, stood on the court just so they could inbound the ball. Mm-hmm. And the announcers were saying, you got to have five people on the court. What's going on? Where are these guys?
But was it only LeBron that walked off, or was it LeBron?
LeBron was the one highlighted that he was already headed to the locker room, but there were other players as well that were just like, fuck it.
Was he the only one on the floor, though? I think there was two on the floor, right, that left?
Yeah, because I saw, like, two people take off their sweats to get back on the floor.
Right.
I personally don't think it's a huge deal.
I do.
Yeah, same. But why not?
It's the middle of the series. It's game three. You're in the trenches of the series. It's not like you're going to acknowledge the other team after the game. You're in battle. You know, the game has been decided. It's 10 seconds left. It's like, okay, like we know this game. We know this one's over. Let's go get the next one. It's whatever. Like, I just personally don't see it as a big deal. Like, I understand the argument though on the other side. Stay on the court. Show respect and, you know, just stay till the clock at zero. I understand that. But to criticize this much, I don't think is a huge deal. That's just me.
Man up. That's what I'm saying. Man up. Okay, y'all didn't come out and play the way you wanted to. You didn't execute your game plan. You didn't win the game, okay. Why are you going to be a sore loser about it? Stay on the court. Finish the game until the buzzer goes off, and then fine. You want to walk off the court? Fine. You don't have to congratulate the team or whatever. But to run off the court like that, like a baby, because you lost the game, boo freaking who? You know? You didn't lose the series. You're still up 2-1. Why are you going to run off the court and just disappear? Like, Come on, be a better sports. Show better sportsmanship than that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a huge deal because I almost wonder how much that
shows. So lack of respect.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, let's start because I have a few bullet points with this son bitch. So, number one, have you guys ever heard the phrase play until the last 10 seconds? No, you hear play until the whistle blows, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what the fuck makes him so special that he just gets to decide that he doesn't get to finish his job that evening?
He's LeBron James.
No other job in the world do you just get to leave before your shift is over because you felt like it had a bad shift. Let me rephrase that. You can, but there are consequences to that. For example, if I was at work, right, and I had a bad day and I just fucking dipped right before my shift ended, just cuz. Now, maybe I've earned enough credit with my bosses for them to be like, all right, we get it. But I would still get a write-up for it. A verbal, a written warning, whatever the case is. Military, if you walk off even 10 seconds before your shift is done, you could be considered for abandoning post to some degree. You just decide to dip. That is never okay. You don't get to just leave because you don't like the way things are going. That makes you a sore loser, and that looks bad on you as a person. Granted, yes, the game was already decided. There was very few time left. You're just getting off the court. Your game's essentially over. But the problem is, essentially over does not mean game is over. Now, here's my thing about that. That seems to me to be a very defeatist attitude. Leaving before time is up tells me that I beat your ass so bad you gave up before the final whistle. I think Jimmy Butler should feel real good about that. I think the Miami Heat should feel real good about that. Because what that shows me, if I'm on the other side of the court, is I got into your head. And I can fucking do it again. Best player in the world just got showed up. Even by guys on his own team, I might add. But Jimmy Butler beat them so bad. The Miami Heat, Eric Spoelstra beat them so bad that they gave up. And that is something that the Miami Heat can capitalize on. Miami Heat can go into this next game going, you know what? We have a shot. We can get into their heads. We can disrupt their game plan. Even without some of our best players, we can do what we need to do. Tyler Hero can step up. A rookie from Kentucky can step up in his first season, his first playoffs, his first championship. Olnick can do the things that Boston fans wish he was doing in Boston. Jimmy Butler can do all the things that every other team was kind of scared of when he was there, being the big man in the room, being the baddest, grittiest motherfucker in the room. Miami prove to themselves and, more importantly, prove to the Lakers that they have a shot. And we saw that when LeBron James decided to walk off the floor.
It's a fair point.
It's ridiculous. Just walking off. How unfucking sportsmanlike is that? The game's not over. You stay.
Yeah. That's a damn good point. And you know Spoelstra will take advantage of that every way he can because he is a damn good coach.
Absolutely. And really should get way more credit than I think he does.
I think he's finally starting to get credit for the fact that he's able to take this team mm-hmm. to the finals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he's also the first Filipino head coach, if I'm not mistaken. I think I heard that somewhere, and I like that a lot.
Is he Filipino?
I believe so. I could be mistaken, but I'm fairly confident that's what I read.
Well, we're about to ask Google.
There you go.
But anyway, yeah.
So that kind of leads us into our next point is unsportsmanlike conduct and instances of it in sports that we've noticed and kind of what is our threshold for, okay, it's unsportsmanlike and unacceptable versus like maybe like a personal foul in NFL where you get a flag. But something more like along the lines, okay, this person should be ejected, this person should be fined, should not be in the league. or just, and not just NFL, but in any sport, of unacceptable, period, no matter what.
By the way, Eric Spolcher is Filipino American.
Nice. Great lesson, too. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the idea of unsportsmanship is kind of interesting. What is or what is not unsportsmanlike? Because like you said, you know, you look at things like in the NFL, right? There's unsportsmanlike conduct for, you know, mouthing off. There's unsportsmanlike conduct for an extra shove after the whistle. There's unsportsmanlike conduct for all variety of little things that, you know, get you 15 more yards up the field, I guess. But then there are some, and in my opinion, like walking off the court early, that rank so much higher and mean so much more, you know? Because, like, for example, John McEnroe, tennis player, people thought he was unsportsmanlike forever because of his mouth and the way that he would talk to judges. And this, I kind of agree. I get the argument, but, like, I don't think that was overly unsportsmanlike. I almost think that's more passion than not. And he brought attention to the sport and attention to what was happening. So, like, to some degree, unsportsmanlike, I think, is – it's hard to define unsportsman as it pertains to, like, a universal. I think it has to go based off of the sport itself. You know what I mean?
Well, I could tell you ones that are, like, big no-nos for me. Is instances where players are going into the stands to fight people in the stands, audience members of the crowd, you know, like the brawl on the garden or whatever, what is it? With Ron Artest going into the stands and fighting people. It happened in hockey a couple times as well, where you have people going off the ice into the stands and fighting all your fans. That is unacceptable to me. Another would be using sports equipment as a weapon, where you've seen, like, Myles Garrett last year using a helmet and hitting somebody with it. You've seen players take bats in baseball and throw them, a la Roger Clemens when he threw the broken bat right back at Mike Piazza going down the line in the World Series. Using equipment as a weapon could potentially really hurt someone, and I think that's unsportsmanlike for me. Fights in general between players, I don't consider it necessarily unsportsmanlike. It's really like heat of the moment, but cheap shots. Like, there was a minor league catcher that didn't like a pitch that the pitcher threw, and before he charged the mound, he kicked the catcher, who was still in his crouching position, in his chest, and then charged him out. That's unacceptable. That is unsportsmanlike to me. Or even, like, just going across a certain line. Like, I'll even dog on my own team here. Alex Cintron, the hitting coach for the Astros. According to sources, he was calling out Ramon Laureano's mom. You don't do that. Dog on his game, if you want to criticize the way he plays the game, whatever, but you don't bring family members and that kind of stuff into arguments and fights and things like that. Keep it on the field. Keep family out of it. That's unsportsmanlike to me.
I got one for y'all. Bat flipping?
No.
I 100% agree.
No.
For me, yeah, I think that, yeah, I don't know why. The whole admiring, the unwritten rules, which there are in every sport.
It's just, it's annoying. Like, it seems very unnecessary to me.
It's a literal physical fuck you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, that's what it is.
That gets me about it. It's really like,
that's not like because it's passion.
Huh?
No,
his
that's
passion. This guy's so fired up. Fuck yeah, I just hit the game winning homer or whatever. Yeah, you know?
But at the same time,
there's another way. There's another way to do it, Kev.
You can still hit somebody and hurt somebody.
Yeah.
Wait, what? You tell me? No way. they flip it hard enough, they flip it to the wrong place, you can hit and hurt somebody. And it is a fuck you. It's like, yeah, I did that. You aren't shit. Fuck you. That's what that is. You know what I mean? You can drop the bat, you can run around, you can stare at them all you want.
I say if you don't like it, make a better pitch, but whatever.
What were you saying, Anthony?
It just always seems unnecessary to me. Yeah.
This is one, too, and, you know, this. Please understand, by no means a personal shot, but, I mean, cheating, getting advantages on other teams, that one has got it. You know what I mean? And I'm not even talking about that, because there was Boston, there was the Yankees with the Apple Watches. There's all kinds of football players wearing the glue on their hands. Like, there's cheating in all kinds of sports. You know what I mean? They're all
spying on the other team's sideline.
Exactly. Like videotaping their practices. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, there's no way. Spygate. Like, every sport has that issue to some degree. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be a huge no-no. Just because it's not a written rule doesn't mean it's not cheating. You know what I mean? Cheating
is a written rule.
Huh?
It is a written rule. That's why all these teams potentially got docked for what they did.
Sure. Who's memoed out? But yeah, you know, that's
still written.
That's a big one for me. Or going after players like in the off season.
Yeah.
Like, or that one.
Or intentionally throwing at guys. Intentionally, like, yeah, throwing at guys. I don't know.
I don't necessarily agree with that one, though.
If no? It's at the head, yes.
If I it's mean, at the head, sure. Yeah, don't hit somebody in the head. But, like, if you decide
to... Metal the back, butt. Okay, that's fine.
That's what I mean. Intentionally throwing at someone's head. That's what I mean.
Okay. Yes.
That's uncalled for.
For sure.
You don't need to cause someone brain damage and possibly die.
Okay. I'll give you one more. Literally kicking someone when they're down.
Oh, yeah.
In Dominican Sue, where he stomped on several players... while they're still on the ground, or shoving their helmet into the ground after they're already down.
Right.
Or several times in soccer, it's happened as well that I've seen kicking the player when they're literally down and on purpose.
Sure.
Not trying to kick at the ball. I mean, it's, yeah, literally kicking somebody when they're down, that's no.
Right.
Make it if you're going to fight someone, make it a fair fight. No cheap shots. Don't kick them when they're down. Fight them face to face, man to man. But
okay, here's one for you. For example, winning a football game by a score of like 88-0. Does a team at some point become unsportsmanlike after winning by like X? No, I don't care. 40 points, 50 points, whatever. Does it border on unsportsmanlike? If you win by an absurd score like 88-0. No?
No.
Why is that?
Play better.
Yeah. Like my as you like to say, my brain tells me play better defense. It's just you're pretty awful if you allow so many points.
Yeah, sure. I'm not saying that you're not. But if there's a huge disparity, like it happens all the time in like Texas high school football. You'll see these absurd scores because these big 5A, 6A, 7A schools are playing these old podunk fucking country towns for warm up before the games, you know, before their district games start.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I am no way, like, I'm in no way taking shots at anybody here, but I mean, We've all seen those high school basketball scores, or like those junior high basketball scores where, you know, people get outscored like 80 or 100 to 0 or 10, whatever it is. Like, I've never considered that unsportsmanlike. It's just that kind of is what it is. I mean, you're awful and you don't play defense. And the other team is
okay. Let me rephrase the question. Are you unsportsmanlike if you keep your A team, your varsity team, in there the entire time?
It's their prerogative, you know?
I mean,
like,
maybe if they're sad,
no real
maybe,
way,
Go ahead.
Maybe sorry, Kev. Maybe if there's obvious bad blood, like it would depend on the situation, it would depend on the game. Like if it's a rival situation, maybe that's different. But if we're talking in general, I don't know.
Like I think if it was a rival for me, I'd say you're more likely to keep your starters in because that's a rival. But I mean, no, that's a gray area for me because you look at it and it's like, okay, really the only reason you pull your starters is so they don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's not because you don't want to run up the score and look bad because there's no threshold of saying, okay, I'm winning by 20 points, 40 points, 60 points. What's that threshold that's saying that is too much now? Right. You know? I mean, you look at the Cowboys game on Sunday, the Browns were winning by 27 points. Cowboys brought it back to within 3. I mean, anything can happen in these games, so why you don't want to let off the gas, period. So my thought on that is, hey, keep going, you know? Right. If you can do it, do it. If they don't want you to do it, tell them to play better, you know? I'll bring up baseball in this regard a couple of years ago where Madison Bumgarner gave a home run to Max Muncy and he hit it in the Bay in San Francisco. Mad Bum took an exception to it, and after the game, Max Muncy was like, you want the ball? Go swim for it. Make a better pitch.
That was hilarious.
Right.
If you don't like it, play better.
That's kind of my mindset with that is just you got to be better somehow. I do think
there are games where there is such a disparity where even if you play better, it will still end equally as bad.
I think that says something about like your mindset. Like if you take personal offense to a team running up the score, like that's you . Like you're telling yourself like, what the fuck, man, they should take it easy. No, they shouldn't take it easy. You should play better. Like that's how I look at it.
Yeah. But sometimes I'll give you another example. Play a perfect game, you're still going to get beat 88-0. You know what I mean?
Like, I'll bring up another scenario for you that kind of debunks your point is you're talking I think it was last year with college football. Number one team in the country, Clemson, going against North Carolina, unranked. And they almost lost the game. And everybody thought this would be a blowout. You never know what's going to happen. That little guy can always step up and make it a game. And if you want that to happen, or if you don't want that to happen, play better for that number one seed. If you want to be that North Carolina team, play like them. Play your asses off. Play better, and then you have nothing to bitch about.
Right. Well, a couple points to that. Number one, they also did a new head coach in Mack Brown. So there are levels of skill set, not only players and coaching and all these things. You can come in with a bad plan. You can come in with a great plan, all these things. But my point is, I think it depends on the situation. If it's clear that the other team has given up and you decide to score 40 more points – that kind of is unsportsmanlike to me. If you know the other team has given up, if you can see it, you can understand it. If they have stopped playing the game, you know, I kind of think, okay, maybe that's a little bit of a dick move. You know what I mean? But again, I can also understand the flip side. For me, it's kind of, like you said, gray area. Generally, no. I'm like, whatever. Do your thing. If you win, you win. If you don't, you don't. That's fine. But I don't know. I think it just kind of – I think it depends on the situation. You know?
Yeah. That's kind of why we want to bring this up is because of that LeBron James walking off the court seems very unprofessional, very unsportsmanlike. So it brought up an interesting question for us. So that's why we brought up this segment. And I am pretty sure we didn't answer it at all. But those are our feelings on unsportsmanlike behavior in sports. So... got anything else to add, Alex?
I don't think so. No, yeah. I think unsportsmanlike is just it's an interesting concept. I think it's very personal to some degree.
Yeah. All right. Well, Alex, you want to close this out?
Sure. All right, guys. As always, we do have our Gmail AA Sports Show @gmail.com. Please feel free to write us in, email us with questions, answers. What do you think unsportsmanlike conduct is? What extent does it go to? And please let us know about anything else that we've talked about this week or coming up. We talked about Major League Baseball and playoffs. Who do you have winning? We're going to talk about some NFL later. So if you have some thoughts on that, please feel free to add in. Additionally, we do have a Patreon. So if you should so choose to donate monetarily, we would be forever grateful. Of course, we want, do want to put that back into our communities, in the greater San Antonio area. So you can go find us on Patreon. I believe it is AA Sports Show on there. As always, do not drink and drive. Don't text and drive. Be kind to one another. Live up to your word. Carry your own weight. And as Kevin loves to say, enjoy the little things. All right, guys. We will see you later on this week for part 3 of this week's episode. As always,
peace.
Peace.
Later. See ya.